Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And Love Letters, as many of you know, is just about that, love letters. I think, and I hope you'll agree with me, that almost any life experience has the seeds of a love letter to someone in it. Someone to whom you can express a thank you, or I remember when you, fill in the blank, or just get over here, I can barely breathe thinking about you. Whatever it is, if it's romantic, if it's sexy, if it's an apology for something, those are wonderful love letters. Doesn't matter what you want to say to anyone at any time for any reason, if it's your truth put to paper in a loving way, that classifies as a love letter as far as I'm concerned. So I'm going to go to today's guest, Catherine Beekvar. And actually, maybe we could talk about your name for a minute, because that's kind of interesting. I love last names. You learn something from people about through their last names. Let me go to you, and let's just talk about you, because what you do professionally is so intriguing and charming to me. Can you talk about your last name just for a minute? Because I had assumed it was a shortened something, and you set me straight.
Right. So my last name is Beekvar, and it is a Czech derivation from the Czech Republic. And in Czech, it is pronounced Beekvar, and there's a bunch of, you know,
little
diacritic characters, yes, on top of some of the consonants and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting because as my career has evolved as a costume designer, I've had people, you know, say, oh, wow, I could just imagine you having your fall line, you know, the House of Beekvar. It's this very, you know, fashion type
name. When you say it that way, it does sound it.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's one thing or the other, but mm-hmm. It has definitely kind of set me apart from a lot of people because it is a very uncommon name, mm-hmm. even in the U.S., you know, because there aren't a lot of people of Czech descent. And, you know, I don't necessarily...
Well, also people change their names.
Yeah. People definitely change their names. And it's, I don't know, I'm a little bit nervous because I'm getting married next summer and I haven't decided whether I'm keeping my name or not. And I am the last, you know, my father has sisters, uh-huh. and I am the last Beekvar.
So what about as a middle name?
I'm thinking about that. My sister took it as her middle name. Mm-hmm. So when she got married, but yeah, it's definitely been, I guess it is a good last name for a creative person.
Yes, but so is what's going to be your married name if you take it.
My married name would be Coniglio.
Yes.
Which is of Italian descent. And so I'd go from one, you know, one ethnic group to another ethnic group. And I don't know, I haven't made that decision.
I just want to say, I'm saying this because I happen to know her fiancé, Sam, because Sam showed up at a love letters workshop I did and was such a star of the evening, and he was so passionate about his questions and his opinions, and he made it very clear that he wanted to write a love letter to his fiance. So I knew about Catherine for like a year now and didn't know I was going to meet her, so I'm delighted. Yes, okay.
Yes, and I was very delighted to be a recipient of
good,
that
I'm
letter.
Glad.
And
oh,
I still
yes.
have it. I have it on my desk.
And yes, and you'll have it forever. That's the thing about love letters.
They're so great. And
yes.
You know, he very carefully hand-wrote it. And
oh, good for
what
him.
A sweetheart.
I'm proud of him. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing and what it was like creatively and what you got out of the air around you, or was this just a genetic gift that had to be expressed?
Well, I grew up in a very creative household. Mm-hmm. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she just was really creative.
In what way?
She was always, she sewed, she mm-hmm. was a seamstress. And
for her family, or
mm-hmm. she made us clothes and Halloween costumes, and she also, you know, I remember she did this series of hangings for our church. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up Presbyterian, and we had these wonderful, like, sort of almost like fabric murals for the different, you know, ecclesiastical seasons and things. And I remember her just spending hours designing.
Where
and,
are they now?
They're at the church. They're still using them. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, that's definitely a legacy that she left. And yeah, so I was always doing little crafty projects with my older sister, and you know, we were always doing some little thing. I mean, I've been making my Christmas presents since I was 5 years old, and you know, just my mother and father were very supportive of creative outlets in
nice.
All different
What does your
ways.
Dad do?
He's actually a chemistry professor.
Oh.
Which, you know, he's, of the scientists that I know, he's mm-hmm. one of the most creative. You know, he's got these
So how are you differentiating that science and creativity? What did he do?
I mean, I think, well, he actually has applied for several patents mm-hmm. for different inventions that he's had. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them sort of have this blending of artistic stuff and science stuff. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's... I think people sort of underestimate the degree of creativity that is required of scientists.
Oh, see, I don't. That's why I'm asking. Because,
yeah.
I mean, chemistry right there, you just said, is kind of a whole art of blending
Absolutely.
Itself.
Well, and also, you know,
And look what it was, alchemy.
Right,
and,
indeed. And I think doing research is, you really do have to, you know, because you look at all the stuff that exists in the world, and you have to kind of look beyond that and imagine what it is that you don't know and what could possibly be explaining
mm-hmm.
what it is that,
mm-hmm.
you know, these results that you're getting and you can't figure it out. And I think, you know, people think of scientists as these very boring kind of in the box doing research. And I disagree.
I do too, of course. And you're lucky because you come genetically from creativity and brilliance in that reasoning kind of being aware and observing thing.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, when
Did
my
he
mom,
teach there? Is that why?
He teaches at University of Texas, El Paso.
Mm-hmm.
So he landed that gig and sort of stuck with it. And my mom moved to the desert,
mm-hmm.
which was really hard on her. I think she loves green plants and, you know, had a rough time, making the change.
But you were aware of that as you were growing up?
I think more in retrospect.
Uh-huh.
My mom passed away when I was 12.
Oh.
And so a lot of, you know, a lot of who she is very much things that I learned about her after she passed away.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there's...
Oh, I've just got chills and an idea, but I'll tell you later. Okay.
So
when did you leave El Paso?
So I left when I was 17. I actually graduated a year early from high school so I could get out of there because I, it was...
What was your push to get out?
Well, you know, my sister went away to college and I sort of saw all the cool stuff that she was up to in college. And I'm like, oh, I want to get there. I want to be out of here. And because there's not a whole lot of creative outlets there. I mean, I was involved in theater in high school,
mm-hmm.
but I wanted something a little bit richer and
mm-hmm.
a little bit, you know, something I could sink my teeth into. And
and just, more options, I guess.
Because, yeah, yeah. More options and just
Was that hard
wacky
for your dad?
Things. I think he... knew that I was a really independent sort of a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he was, as long as I was happy, he was happy
for
me. Oh,
that's wonderful.
Yes. And so, you know, I got out of there and...
Where'd you go?
I actually moved to Ireland
for
a year. I did a study abroad program.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of like, well, let's get me as far away as is reasonable. And that was
and you
a
went,
little bit too
And you
far.
Went someplace that was very, very green.
Very green, very different. Couldn't possibly be more different.
But I mean, to reflect your mother's...
Yeah, exactly. So, but, and that was great. It was, I learned a lot about myself.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, in that year, one of my sort of take-home lessons was I didn't really bring any kind of art supplies with me or any kind of creative anything. And so I remember... At one point, I went to an art store and I purchased some paint, and it was like dawn. It was this amazing. I went, I forgot how important this was to me, and that was actually.
What
kind
were
of
you
a
doing there
experience.
That you forgot that?
Well, I was, you know, taking classes in college and doing
stuff.
Oh,
I see.
And, you know, I was just kind of like, okay, I'm going to be a student.
Busy
and,
with that part of life.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
And I sort of forgot that there's so much more. That keeps me going and keeps, you know, that's important to me to be doing with my time.
Yeah.
And so I just sort of, it was this revelation of like, I have to have creativity in my life.
So how did you go from this point to doing costume design? And
so, when I was done with my study abroad year, I moved to San Diego, which was where my sister was living with, she was actually living in my aunt's guest house
mm-hmm.
there. So it was this kind of family support unit and it was much better for me to be there than back at home because
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to go back home. I wanted something different. So, and I spent the next 2 years sort of working out what I wanted to do with myself. And, you know, I did the what color is your parachute thing, and I looked at different schools, and, you know, I was taking classes at community college and just kind of figuring out what I wanted to do.
Were you sewing all along, or had that gone?
I actually had, yeah, I mean, I my mom taught me how to sew before she passed away. And when I actually, when I was in Ireland, sewed my friend's wedding dress. I had a friend, an American gal there who, she got married to an Irish guy and sewed her wedding dress and the bridesmaids' dresses.
Wow.
And so I was, you
That's
know.
Quite
I
a
even,
gift.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was wonderful to be able to do that.
I mean, I meant to her, but yes to you too,
yeah.
I guess.
Well, it, cool. well, it was. Yeah. It was really great to be able to do both things. And, you know, definitely I think that's one of two wedding dresses that I've ever made. And I don't really like doing them. But that's another story.
Sure.
It's a lot of stress. It's a high, you know, high tension time.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I, when I got to San Diego, I had my mom's sewing machine and I just was, you know, crafting and creating and making different things and sewing clothes for myself. And,
You have clients for whom you sewed?
Not yet. I hadn't really started my business in earnest. It was more just like, oh, I want a bathrobe. So I'll sew a bathrobe. And it was much more a hobby at that point. And I decided in that sort of time, I think of it very much as like I was a seed that was germinating underground. And so it was very, you know, I'm thinking of that like nurturing. That was a very nurturing time for me. And then I decided I wanted to do costume design. I transferred to UC Davis and I was in their costume and textile design program. And that was when, you know, the plant started growing up out of the ground.
Good
and I'm learning different things and I'm actually learning the right way to sew. And I was working at, I worked as a stitcher in the costume, the theater, the costume shop for the theater program. And so I learned a whole lot of things there. And it was actually the spring before I graduated, which was when I started my business.
And now how did you start that? I think that would be a nice thing to be able to tell people how a young woman who has got a talent and knows what she loves doing translates that into starting a business.
It was an interesting sort of process. So I decided that the first name of my business was Once in a Blue Moon Designs. And that was, in my mind, Once in a Blue Moon meant, well, I'll just kind of do this when I need money. And so it was always, at that point, it was always kind of a side thing. Because I wanted to work and have a steady job and all of that, in addition to it. But I, you know, when I needed the money, I wanted to take on clients or I don't even really know. But I sort of, from the very get-go, in my mind, it was always something that was going to make money. I didn't want to start a business that cost me money. So, you know, I didn't jump in with a big, you know, loan or any kind of debt obligations or anything like that. You know, I already had most of the equipment that I needed because it was just something that I did already. And it was really, you know, it's like, okay, first hurdle, apply for a business license from the city and file the fictitious business name statement and do all these things that, you know, all the little checkmark things that you do when you're starting a business. And it was really a casual thing, actually. It was very much, it was sort of like it was a hobby and then it got a little bit bigger.
Oh, good. That's the wonderful way to have something grow organically instead of cramming
instead
it through
some process. Yeah, or like, oh, I've got to have a business plan and I've got to figure out what my, you know, profit margins have to be and, you know, get all this stuff going. And that was terribly intimidating for me because I don't really have a head for numbers and, you know, it was very much, I now think of myself as an entrepreneur, but back then it was more like,
That's a wonderful way to do it, though.
Customer.
Just dive right in.
Right.
So you had, by the way, I want to say, and I wish this were TV because you're wearing, in addition to that beautiful smile and laugh, you're wearing a t-shirt that says, handmade is better. And across it is a scissors, a little bottle of a smiling little bottle of machinery oil, a sewing machine with a bright eye that is really the stitch selection wheel, right?
Something like that.
Something like that. And a little skein or a little puff of yarn with two knitting needles and a spool of thread holding a needle as if he is the conductor. So cute. So did you get clients? What did people come to you for?
It was mostly my friends, actually, you know, for most of the life of my business, most of my customers have been my friends. So, you know, people needed something altered, you know, oh, I'm going to be in a wedding. I need you to do my bridesmaid's dress or, you know.
That's great. So they come to someone they trust.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, you know, that was a really great way to kind of get started because it sort of, I learned the ropes of
oh, and see yourself as a professional.
And it wasn't quite, it was very much this like, you know, I'm in the kiddie pool first.
Yeah. And, okay. You know, so let's talk about going into the big pool.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk about your designs and your website, which is so delicious. I was surprised. I mean, you know, you get to a certain stage in life and you don't expect to be totally knocked over surprised. But what you do is, well, I want to say, I'm going to take a stab at what I saw. They're essentially like tool belts for girls instead of a purse. And they're kind of ornamental pieces of clothing that you strap on around your waist and hips. And it's got pockets. And they're deliciously gorgeous. They're not just pockets. They're ruffled and they're eyelet and they're colors and textures. And some of them have bustles. Oh, they're so sexy. You've never seen a tool belt look so sexy. Is that what you would say?
I love that description. That's just great. So it's funny you bring that up because I, in the sort of, you know, if we're looking at the timeline of mm-hmm. business and life and creativity and things, mm-hmm. There was a point when Once in a Blue Moon Designs became Blue Moon Designs,
yeah.
which
oh,
was
nice.
When I moved to the Bay Area after I completed some years of graduate school in Southern California, moved to Oakland, and I was like, okay, I'm looking for work very avidly, and mm-hmm. I also need to figure out a way to make money. So let's take the business thing seriously now because, you know.
I just want to say changing, I mean, being kind of a word fan,
sure.
changing it from Once in a Blue Moon to Blue Moon takes it from being sometimes to something very rare and precious. Is that what you had in mind?
Something like that, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, it was definitely more, I wanted to simplify because mm-hmm. one of the things I learned, you know, when I went to apply for, or when I went to figure out how I was going to do my website, onceinabluemoon.com is a lot of stuff to type.
Oh, and people don't do it.
So I was kind of like, okay, you know. I need to really, you know, streamline. And, you know, my logo has always been a blue moon. Mm-hmm, and actually, mm-hmm. my t-shirt doesn't show it, but I do have
a little tattoo.
I have a blue moon tattoo. That's why it was my logo and why it's my company and everything.
I see.
And so it was at that point that it sort of became, you know, I took that, I went from the kiddie pool to the big kid pool and started, you know, really thinking of myself as a entrepreneur, and you know, I got my website going, and I got my Etsy shop going, and
What drew you to the kind of designs you do, which are very voluptuous and very feminine, in a kind of a old fashioned, almost traditional way of femininity.
So I have always
because I see you're not dressed like that yourself right now.
Well, this is my fit in with everybody on the street costume.
So is the other really the real you?
So I have a lot of different costumes, I think.
Okay.
And I've always loved dress up events and doing costuming. And so, you know, it was a natural fit that I do things like the Renaissance Fair.
Oh,
and
sure.
The Dickens Christmas Fair. And so these were all wonderful things to discover. I mean, I feel like that was kind of the thing that was missing in my upbringing were mm-hmm. these rich, theatrical, mm-hmm. fantastical, historical, you know, things to do with one's time. And so I think, you know, with that sort of historic costuming, you know, all that sort of vocabulary, design vocabulary rolling around in my mind, I also go to Burning Man. And I was at the event, you know, it was my second or third time there. And I'm trying to put stuff in my pockets. And I'm like, I don't have pockets in my costumes. And darn it, I need some costume pockets. So that was how I made one for me. And I put darts in the waist because I'm a hippie kind of gal.
Yes.
And I wanted it to fit and look great. And
you're shapely, for sure.
Yes,
I mean, this is not a boy's figure we're talking about
definitely,
here.
Definitely, definitely.
And your design seemed to just kind of caress and cradle a really female figure.
Well, and I realized that one of the things that keeps me going in my business and that I really, it's sort of from the very heart and soul of what I do is fitting your body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's altering a dress to fit you better or, you know, all the way to making a corset. The thing that we're missing in our lives is that sense of, it was made just for you.
Oh, yes.
you know, things, you know, we're so in this ready-to-wear culture that we have.
You're so right, because you go to a store right now, and if you want something, it doesn't matter what your shape, what your height, what your chest, what your hips, what your tush looks like, you get small, medium, or large.
And it's a false idea. It's
crazy.
That's what's ridiculous. Right. Is no one, not even the fit models that they're messing
with,
nobody is that shape or size.
Yeah. So you're giving credit for being really unique and one of a kind to each woman.
Absolutely. Everybody's shaped differently.
Yes.
And, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how diverse and fabulous bodies are. And so, you know, I think that's very much a motivator for how... What is really important to me?
So that's a big and lovely issue, and says something wonderful and dear about you, mm-hmm. I think, which is this respect and love for an individual form.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I think, you know, people are they get so hung up about their body, and you know, I know this because when I'm at my events and I'm trying to, you know, I'm putting a belt around somebody, and you can kind of tell that they like the instant I sort of reach for their hips, they're sort of like, oh, don't go there because that's a part of me I don't like.
Oh.
And I go, no, because this is everybody's got them, and I think it's, you know, it's really just what people think they look like and what they actually look like are not in alignment.
That's right.
Fundamentally.
Right.
And so I think one of my goals in life and one of the things I hope to do is to really help people feel better about their bodies because I dress them in a way that makes them look good. That's what I do.
I could just weep. Okay. This is so nice. This is so nice. And so talk about nurturing and loving.
Absolutely.
This is just wonderful. So please give your website, because I'm hoping people will go right to it and take a look.
So it's blue-moon-designs.com.
Let's spell it all out.
Okay. blue-moon-designs.
.com. And keep in mind that a dash is not the same as the underscore.
Right.
So if you want to get to Catherine, you got to do the dash. And you should dash right over there because it's wonderful. In line with all that you've said and your whole philosophy of working and generosity in taking into account what people really need instead of foisting them on a size one stick piece of a clothing, who is your love letter going to go to today?
So my love letter is written to your hips. And by your, I don't mean Janet's, I mean everybody who's listening.
Would you read it to us?
Yes.
Because, you know, sometimes people come here and we just talk about it or start mm-hmm. to plan it. But it's wonderful when people come with a love letter all written. And then I want to talk about your love letter.
Okay, absolutely. So this letter is addressed to every woman who's ever despaired that her hips are too big, unattractive, or otherwise shaped wrong. My dear, you really have no idea how lovely your curvaceous curves are. Like a blushing ripe apple, ready for someone to take a crisp bite. Yum! Your hips are an extension of your root, the axis of your body's strength and power. They are a sign and a symbol of your femininity and allure, setting your lover's heart aflame with just a shimmy and a twist. Why do you suppose that women throughout history have endured boning, strapping, lacing, and other such forms of architecture? Why, to get the hip curve that you were born with. Trust me, in my line of work, I've seen a lot of hips, and they are all gorgeous, just as gorgeous as yours. Hips are who we are and how we're built. They are a sign of health and strength. Never believe that your hips aren't just perfect. Because they are. With love, Catherine.
Oh, this is wonderful. And it triggers off so many thoughts right here. And one of them is, I read an article, an anthropological article years ago, and somebody had gone into the Amazon, into an area where these people had never seen Vogue magazine or whatever standard of beauty is foisted upon people in modern culture. And the men were asked to choose which shapes they found most wonderful. And there were women's shapes. And a lot of them were, you know, straight up and down and real boyish and cult-like. And, I mean, all of these are beautiful. It doesn't really matter. But in terms of nature's intent somehow, and every single man who was asked this, obviously via translator, picked a shape where there was a definite waistline. And how do we define a waistline? Is there hips under it?
Absolutely. And that, I think it's funny because, you know, the way that my belts are designed, the pockets kind of stand out mm-hmm. a little bit from the hips. And so, you know, people are kind of like, oh, I don't know. I'm really, you know, because there's that sort of outside thigh.
Well, then you can
area.
Blame it on the garment.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's very clearly the pockets. It's not your body. Right. And so, you know, the reason why Marie Antoinette era dresses have those huge big panniers.
Yes.
And the reason why, you know, there's been, like, in the Victorian era, they had these huge bell-shaped skirts.
Yes.
All of it, it's optical illusion, because what that does,
exactly.
all of that architecture
makes
is make the waist look
and,
small.
And the reason Scarlett O'Hara had herself cinched in.
Absolutely.
Not so much to get a small waist, but to have a shape.
Right, right.
Sadly enough, the less hips you have, the more you have to cinch in your waist to do that.
Yeah, but you know, there's styles, and I think I really feel like it's not necessarily that one style is going to look good on every body.
Right, right.
It's finding the style that looks right for your body. And I think, you know, many women happen to have that sort
mm-hmm,
of
right.
smaller in the waist and bigger in the hips. But, you know, for those women who don't, you can get a little, you know,
yes.
especially with my belts, there's a little bit of a lacing in the back. So it cuts in, you know, it cinches in just slightly and
right.
gives you that shapely sort of that magic hip curve.
Yes. So for the girl who wants to take a classical shape to Burning Man, this is perfect.
On the street or
right.
to, you know,
yes,
some
of
event
course,
like
of
the Edwardian Ball or,
yes.
you know, all kinds of.
Or just that combination of classical style and a really modern event. That,
something
you know,
like that, yeah.
So I had another thought, just
sure.
really quickly, that you talked about your mother and that she died when you were 12. And you're carrying a lot of her in you.
Yeah.
And aren't you doing something she would be thrilled with?
Oh, my goodness.
What about writing to her? And catching her up with your life someday.
I think that would be fabulous. But it's almost like she's so much around
that you don't need to do
that.
To,
you know, yeah. it's like she's with me all the time.
Okay.
You know,
yes.
I use her sewing machine all the time.
So you don't really have to do
very,
that. To,
I kind of, but I like that idea though.
There's so many things to do. And as far as this one, I always feel like a love letter should be handwritten, stamped, and mailed to someone. How could you do that with this?
Who would I mail it to?
Right. Who would you mail it to? What if you mailed it to yourself and you started out with, you know, my love letter to your hips. This letter is addressed to every woman who's ever despaired that her hips are too big, unattractive, or otherwise shaped wrong. But I'm going to send it to myself as a constant reminder for why I'm in business, whatever it is.
Yeah,
and then send it to yourself, stamp it, and mail it. And you see when you receive it if you don't feel a little jolt of delight. And then what about scanning it onto your website or something?
I absolutely want to put it on my website.
In your handwriting?
Like, yes, yeah.
Oh, that would be great.
Because I feel like, I mean, it's one of those things that really, even for the hard parts of, oh my gosh, I've got to do my sales taxes and oh God, all the parts about my business that really are a drag, that having connected with what keeps me going, I can come back to it and say, all right, I do this because I love it and I love bodies and I want to make sure people like their body.
And isn't your whole career and what you've chosen to make kind of a way of communicating with women about their bodies?
It is. And
so how nice to have a little...
Yeah. Yeah.
A little addendum.
Certainly.
In writing. And women will see that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for doing this with me. I am so charmed by you and by what you do and how you do it and what motivates you. It's just wonderful. Thank you.
You are welcome.
So I just want to say that we are reaching the... I wish we could talk longer, but we can't. And so I want to just remind you all that if you think you need a special reason to write a love letter, please remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion all on its own and doesn't need anything but your desire to tell someone something good. So until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye.